Welcome to the It Could Be Said podcast. My name is Will Corley, and I'm joined as always by the one, the only Dr. Luke Middup. Say hello, Luke.
Hello.
And we are going to talk today about not the British election, which is incredibly exciting and crazy things are happening in the opinion polls, but we're going to have a special podcast solely about the French election. Are you feeling Frenchy with it today, Luke?
I'm somewhat disappointed that this means we can't reference Gillian Duffy, but yeah, I'm feeling French.
Well, I'm pretty sure Gillian Duffy would have backed the National Front if she lived in France, which brings us on to the shock results, because for the only the second time in the Fifth Republic, the National Front have made it through to the second round. So to explain the French electoral system created by the one, the only, the great Charles de Gaulle, in France, you have a ballot for president. You get to cast your preference, the person you want to be president. Assuming nobody gets 50% of the votes, you then go to a second round when the top two people contest for the presidency. The genius of this system is that, unlike a alternative vote, instant runoff vote system where you rank people in order of preference, the non-extremist candidates know who they need to coalesce around to defeat the extremists. And because the second round is a separate vote, the person who wins in the second vote has legitimacy because they beat the other candidate fair and square, even if they were the runner-up on the first time round. So once again, 37 years after he died, Charles de Gaulle is saving the French Republic. What a man.
What a man. I mean, I would just like to point out that the irony of this, of course, is that the system was designed to prevent the communists winning, and it's now preventing a party that most people would see as quasi-fascist.
Well, you say that, but people always have to remember that de Gaulle came to power not just due to fears of communist revolution, but the idea that the war in Algeria was going to lead to a military coup, and the people who would have backed that military coup were the Algerian paratroopers, and the National Front was founded by a Algerian paratrooper, Jean-Marie Le Pen. So it all bundles together in a neat bow. But let's talk about the results. So as we are recording, we do not know who has won, but we do know the top two. We know the duopoly of French politics, and that is Marine Le Pen and Emmanuel Macron. They are the top two.
You mean Emmanuel Macron?
Sorry, that went out wrong. So Macron and Le Pen are the top two. The exit polls, which in France are based on taking a sample of votes, actual votes, not talking to people once they leave the voting booth, literally taking votes out of the ballot boxes, they suggest Macron has slightly edged Le Pen by about 2 percentage points. As we talk, Le Pen is ahead by 2 percentage points, but the vote counted is primarily in the rural areas, because the city areas close their ballots later. So maybe Le Pen ends up winning the first round, but if she doesn't, it's not a surprise, because at the moment things are in line with the projections. What do you make of the result, Luke?
Well, I mean, it's pretty much what we've expected for several weeks. I mean, there was a moment where Francis Fillon and Jean-Luc Mélenchon, the further left candidate, looked like they might make it into this runoff. But I think it is worth bearing in mind there were a total of 11 candidates running here. So even though the percentages look low, you've got to bear in mind that that's out of a field of 11. Do you just want to go over the various party affiliations, Will? Because I think that's quite important.
Okay, so we won't go through all of them because we'll be here all day. But so you basically have, Macron, who created his own new party called En Marche, and he He was a socialist economics minister who basically, a lot of people will talk about how this signed a socialism win. But what happened was, is Benoît Hamon won the socialist nomination against Vallès, who was the French prime minister. So, and after Vallès lost the socialist nomination, the socialist establishment basically backed Macron over their own party's candidate. So, I mean, already the French president, and we'll get on to the difference between president and prime minister later on, but already the French president is preparing to endorse Macron. He is very happy with this result. So don't think that Macron is a great anti-establishment vote. It isn't. So you have Macron as a rebooted socialist party. You also have, as I mentioned, Hamon, who is the official socialist candidate, who has had what could only be called an absolute disaster. He, based on the exit polls, based on the projections, he polled 7%. The last time the socialists failed to make it to the top two was with Jospin in 2002, when they got around about 17%. This is an absolute disaster, and one has to assume that Macron and his new movement will kind of consume the Socialist Party, much like Giscard did when he took over, when he managed to beat the Gaullists in the mid-70s. So there's
the one thing I will say about that is Hamon was not popular in the Socialist Party. He won that primary again because it was a very broken field.
No, absolutely. We talk about Hamon, let's talk about Michelon. Michelon was also another cabinet minister from the Socialist government. This gives you an idea how the Socialists have fractured. So the issue of Hamon, it wasn't just that he was far left, it's that he was new far left, in the sense of he had all sorts of wacky ideas about robot taxes, about the end of work. And what Michelon came out with was much more of the old school religion, which was, let's tax the rich, let's give more money to the workers, let's expand productivity so there's more jobs. So whereas Hamon was talking about a future that could never exist, Michelon was talking about a past that never was. And the past that never was more popular. So Michelon, by the projections, got around 19%. Michelon was in the socialist government, but it would not be too much of an exaggeration to call him a communist. He entered politics in a movement that attracted communists. The movement he stood on the ticket of includes communists. And like communists, when they are given a choice between liberal democracy and fascists, they go, I don't know. And we'll come back to that point in a minute. So you then have Francis Fillon. Francis Fillon is the man that is meant to be France's next president. He is a former prime minister of France. When he won the Republican, yes, Americans, the French call their conservatives Republicans now. When he won the Republican primary, he was the prohibitive favourite to win the French presidency. But then it turned out that he'd been diddling his expenses on an industrial scale, to the point where it wasn't just that he'd been diddling his parliamentary expenses by getting his wife to do work she wasn't doing, but that he'd been getting his rich friends in various businesses, allegedly, to get her to do work she wasn't doing either. And what even worse was, is that the idea of his wife doing work completely contradicted the viewpoint of their relationship they'd been trying to present to his hardcore traditional Catholic base, because they've been trying to present her as a stay-at-home wife. So the whole reason why the whole scandal about the fact that he'd actually been billing the taxpayer, or she'd been billing various magazines for work, the reason that became such a scandal was because they've been telling everybody she just stayed at home to look after kids, mind the home. And those scandals hold him under line. He refused to quit repeatedly. He still got 90% of the vote. That is 3 times the official socialist candidate and only 4% behind Macron, based on the projections. So you imagine what a non-scandal winner, say Juppé, because Sarkozy, boy, if you think Fillon's got scandals, you should start Sarkozy, the former French president. But imagine someone like Alain Juppé had have won the French presidency, won the Republican nomination. I mean, there's no reason to think they may have gotten 30% of the vote, in all seriousness.
Yeah, the only thing I'd say to that is Alain Juppé has had scandals in his past as well. And there's no reason to think he would be Mr. Squeaky Clean,
put it this way, right? So the one thing that was keeping Fillon in the race was that they had this hardcore Catholic constituency. And then this week it broke that he might have been having an affair with his secretary. I mean, this guy, you can talk about living on the wild side, but this guy, I mean, he struts, he moonwalks, he dances, he hip-hops, he does everything on the wild side. This guy is a lunatic. I mean, do that once you're president, you know, if you want to be president.
Well, frankly, the French don't care what their presidents do. They expect it.
Yes, that's the point. But they do care what their prime ministers do, because their presidents are kings, their prime ministers are politicians. You can't get away with this stuff before you're president. Yes, if you're Francis Mitterrand, once you're president, you can have your mistress come to your funeral after you die in office, and everybody turn around and say, "Who's that woman? Oh, that's the mother of the president's illegitimate son." I'd be like, "Oh, fair enough. No big deal."
Fair enough.
And then finally, you have Marine Le Pen, who actually, other than Macron and Michelin, is the least scandal-ridden of these candidates. Marine Le Pen is the daughter of Jean-Marie Le Pen, the founder of the French National Front, as we mentioned, the aforementioned Algerian paratrooper, who literally, if you go back to the 70s, was literally a fascist from central casting. He literally walked around with an eye patch due to an eye injury he encountered in Algeria's War of Independence. Le Pen, in many ways, is a tragic figure because it's not entirely clear whether she's happy with her lot in life, because she, you know, Le Pen was a very famous figure in French politics and she got the blowback. I mean, you can read stories about how her teachers would shout at her as being a daughter of a fascist. And there's some evidence that she actually tried to get away from this all and just get a normal job. Couldn't get a normal job and then just ended up in the family business. And she has tried to decontaminate the National Front's brand. Now, to the point of expelling her own father from the party, because he kept banging on about how the Holocaust didn't quite happen.
I think him and Ken Livingston should get their own podcast.
Well, yeah, Jean-Marie Le Pen and Ken Livingston, I mean, who would come up for air first, let the other speak, is kind of the question. But the issue with the National Front is, have they detoxified as a means to an end? Or have they really changed their ways? And the old boil keeps bubbling forward. And that was the case in this campaign. So there's a famous thing a couple of weeks ago when she said that France wasn't responsible for the Holocaust that happened in France. Because, you know, as has become increasingly apparent, the Vichy government did send many Jews to their death in German concentration camps. And so you keep getting these things where it becomes quite clear. But what's definitely true is they've written a very, very anti-Muslim, anti-immigrant campaign. Not just in the case of let's stop immigration now, but also in the case of let's strip French nationality out from bi-national citizens, let's strip residency rights from non-citizens who have the right to be in France, and also, we'll get on to the European Union as I mentioned, let's make a permanent break from the European Union. So whatever you say about National Front, maybe they're not as bad as when her dad was in charge, but they're still pretty heavy stuff. And I think people who compare her to Trump and say Trump is better, yes, you, Matthew Eagleless, may want to actually listen to what she's saying, because I don't remember Trump saying we should actually kick out Mexican-American citizens who have Mexican citizenship. That's just what the National Front say.
So, yeah, a scary version of things to come.
So, but hey, so, they're the candidates. Everybody else is irrelevant. They don't matter. They're the candidates. Macron, Le Pen are the top two. I think the first thing to say is the polls are right, Luke.
Yes, yeah. This is a red letter day for the French polling industry.
Well, I mean, as he said, I mean, I've said this in many areas. Pity the poor pollsters, because the thing with the French election system is you don't have to be a lot wrong to completely change the result in the first rounds. I mean, no. According to the exit polls, you're looking at 4%, you're looking at 4% margin. So if Le Pen, say Le Pen lost 2 votes and Fillon gained 2 votes, completely different result. Completely different result. So difficult election to poll right. Let's take the two leading candidates in turn. What is your impression of Macron?
Well, I mean, the first thing to say is the man is a former investment banker. I mean, if you want an Anglophone comparison, it would be Tony Blair. He's very pro-business, socially liberal. I suspect he'll get on well with whoever wins the German election he's coming up with this year. He seems hell-bent on maintaining the Franco-German axis. Relatively young guy, inspired by Obama in the States. In fact, there was a fairly cringeworthy telephone call with Barack Obama the other day where President Obama didn't seem to know who he was.
Well, I mean, what happened was is Macron's application for the Obama fan club had been lost in the post, and Axelrod pulled a few strings and gave Macron the phone call he was meant to have as Obama's 1 million fan club member.
it was a little bit embarrassing for a man who, you know, wants to be president of the French Republic to come across as an enormous fanboy.
What is Obama doing? I mean, you literally have France trying to defeat the far left, the far right, and by the way, your successor is putting their thumb on a scale for the far right, which we'll come back to. You can't stop having cruises with Oprah Winfrey or Richard Branson just to pop over to France and do a campaign appearance. I mean, it would help now. In particular, yeah. In the context of the first round, it would have helped.
Do you think?
Mm.
People don't normally like having foreigners mess in their elections.
Maybe, but... well, in that case, don't do the phone call. Either you're going to have Obama get involved, or you're not. So one or the other. No, if you don't think it's going to help, don't do it. But if you're going to do it, then have it done properly. Have Obama there. I think Obama would have helped Macron. in the first round. Maybe in the second round it'll be different. But in terms of getting, you know, if you were worried about getting to this first round, a bomb would definitely help. It definitely helped you mobilise the youth vote. Do you remember, it's very different to when we were growing up, because we grew up in the shadow of George W. Bush, where Europeans hated America. But then the generation after us grew up with Obama's America, where America had a cooler president than any of our own countries. So the young people today will have a far more favourable impression of America until Trump does his work, than we were used to when we were at university.
Ah, young folks today. I tell them about George Bush and they don't believe you.
I mean, the thing I'd say about Macron is, as has been said, quite interestingly on BBC News, anyone who says he's the youngest chief executive of France since Napoleon is wrong, because they're taking it from when Napoleon became emperor. Napoleon was first consul for a long time before he became emperor, so he's not the youngest French chief executive since Napoleon. Napoleon was younger. But what is interesting about him is, like you say, he is a repudiation of the idea that France is mad and it's time for a change. Except the fact that one of the things I think the French are mad about is their politics has got clogged up with a lot of old politicians. And that what the French keep asking for is a new broom. The danger of Macron is, we've been here before, in the sense of Hollande was meant to be a new broom. Sarkozy was meant to be a new broom. Believe it or not, even Chirac was meant to be a new bloom. The French do seem to kind of in that old thing about the First World War, where, you know, you keep doing the same thing and expecting a different answer. And
it's potentially going to be worse for Macron, because you say he may take over the Socialist Party, which may happen, but technically at the moment he has no party machinery behind him. Now, there are going to be parliamentary elections in June. If it doesn't play out the way you were suggesting earlier, and I think that's debatable, you know more about this than I do, frankly, but there is a danger that you won't have this, you won't have the power base in Parliament to actually govern.
Okay, so we'll talk about it. So we'll get on to Le Pen in a second. So the assumption is, as we're talking about, the Gaulle created relatively unique. I mean, there are places in America that have what's called a jungle primary. But the reason in America they have it is very different. The reason why American states, such as Georgia, actually, which we saw this week, the reason they have it is the idea of the Southern Democrats were trying to enforce white supremacy. They didn't want the danger of, say, three Democrats running in a primary and they would divide a vote and the Republicans sneak in. So the idea was, if we let everybody stand in the top two, stand off, then you'd always get a white candidate and a black-backed Republican candidate against each other. And so the white Democrats would always unite around the white candidate. So it's different in America. American context is completely different. In France, it's always based on this idea of, you might get the communists, you might get the fascists through to the second round, but then everybody else could unite against them and defeat them. If we assume Macron wins, the reason why the parliamentary elections are the same year as presidential elections, not at the same time, is for the same reason. So France used to have it where the president was elected for 7 years, but the parliament was for 5 years. And what that kept causing was basically midterm blues, where you kept having the parliament elected midway through the presidential term. And so the presidents would keep having cohabitation, and that's a French word, it was cohabitation, a president of one party would have to cohabit with a prime minister of another party. Because the way it works in France is you have your president, you have your parliament, but a parliament, the parliament selects a prime, well, the president selects a prime minister who can command majority in parliament. In a weird way, it's actually quite, it's a lot closer to what the original idea of a prime minister was in the English setting. And so, you know, Chirac was prime minister for Mitterrand, and Chirac as president had just been as a socialist prime minister.
Yeah, so let's just explain that. Chirac was a right-wing prime minister serving alongside the socialist president, and Jospin was a socialist prime minister serving alongside a right-wing president.
And the French, it became a nonsense. And it was worse in France than, say, if the same system exists in America. Because the issue with France was, because it's a European Union country, the French presidency's powers are very similar to the American presidency's. But if you ignore this whole issue about selecting the prime minister, in a sense that it has a lot of leeway over foreign policy, not so much over domestic policy, except the fact that it has to ultimately sign off on things. But the issue was that so much of domestic policy within the European Union is the purview of international diplomacy. So, you know, the French president would have to go to European Union conferences, agree things, but he'd have to make sure he could push that through the French parliament, because it involved changes in legislation. So what you would have is a French president would literally have to bring along his prime minister. So it would kind of be like bringing, no, say if you are a man with a mistress, you'd have to bring over your mistress to date night with your wife to make sure the mistress agreed with the menu you're picking out. It was really, really weird. And it made France a bit of a laughingstock. I mean, I remember I don't know if I'm laughing or I'm crying, but as a 12-year-old watching this farce play out on my TV screen, and, you know, British media would just fall over themselves laughing at, you know, the Chirac Jospin. And again, the other thing that made it worse, what you have to remember, is that, you know, the Prime Minister of the opposing party was the leading candidate to replace the President. So it wouldn't just be as simple as these two guys from different parties, they disagree. Say if you have a Speaker of the House who's a Republican and a President who's a Democrat. Because never does the Speaker of the House stand to become president in the next cycle. The Prime Minister, as I said, Chirac will play Mitterrand. The Prime Minister will be angling to take over the president's job. So it's a complete fiasco. So what the French did, they did something very sensible. They changed their constitution. They basically brought the cycles in sync. They made the presidential and the parliamentary cycles, 5 years. They brought forward both elections over the same year, but they made sure the parliamentary election was after the presidential election, with the idea that once people know who the president is, they will give the president a big majority. And one time we had the situation where the winner of the presidency had an inflated majority, because they happened to draw the long straw of going up against the Front National. It was in 2002 when a scandal within Chirac managed to be the one against Jean-Marie Le Pen. The Gaullists won an inflated majority far beyond their wildest dreams, because people said, we want you guys to have a majority so you can govern the country. And I think Macron can handle the negotiations with the socialists, he can have the same thing. I think this idea that Macron won't be able to do anything is premature. if he can get a deal with the socialists, he'll get a thumpy majority, because the French want change. They don't want divided government. They're not like the Americans. The Americans like divided governments. The French don't. They like government. They like strong government. As long as he can get a legitimate slate together, he'll get a majority.
I mean, I think the thing is as well, the one thing to say is that system does give the French president an enormous amount of power for a democratic system.
Well, yeah, I mean, no, literally, it is a de Gaulle's powers were the Roman dictator. He was there to save the Republic. I mean, this is the thing. People think, you know, when was the last time the revolution in Western Europe? 1958. The French government collapsed under the weight of the war in Algeria. I mean, it was so bad. You actually had in 1961. A second attempt at a military coup. People didn't realise how close France came to leaving the Western Alliance, either through becoming a fascist dictatorship or becoming a communist republic.
There is no way around it. Charles de Gaulle, great man, great democrat that he was brought to power on the back of a military coup.
Well, no, I disagree. I fundamentally disagree. He came to power because the Republican institutions realised they had to suspend democracy to save the Republic. The military coup was coming. And you know that because the people behind the military coup were not happy that de Gaulle took over. It was the Parliament saying, save us. You know, it's like that scene in The Dark Knight where Harvey Dent is explaining what dictator meant in the Roman Empire, that sometimes the Senate would say, we have to suspend our institutions to save the Republic. That is what de Gaulle was. I mean, to the point where, you know, there were the far-right agitators in Algeria were forced to back him. They did not want to back him. They knew he was dangerous. They knew he was bad for their cause, but they couldn't go against him. I mean, this is the thing with de Gaulle. Just a sidetrack for going to Le Pen. No, de Gaulle, we were talking about this earlier, like, you say Churchill. The only thing you can say that Churchill did good for this country was he didn't let us surrender to the Germans in 1940. Well, make peace with the Germans in 1940. We're never going to surrender.
No, surrender.
Well, it would have been a surrender, but yeah. We didn't surrender to Germans in 1940. But with de Gaulle, you know, you can literally go like, de Gaulle kept the Free French afloat in 1940, which was, in many ways, it's weird because it's his least consequential because he didn't have much power, but it's his most important in the sense of that idea that France stayed fighting and never succumbed to German domination. Only exists due to the force of his personality. He's a junior brigadier who got promoted defence minister late in the war for France.
Junior defence minister as well, right?
And so the fact that he managed to portray this idea of the free French and that continue is incredible. But then you have, you know, refused American imposition of rule of the French colonies in 1942, with potentially his biggest contribution actually was refusing American occupation of France in 1944. The American plan after D-Day was to basically occupy France like they did Iraq in 2003, and de Gaulle was not able to veto it. And nor were the British, because the British wanted to veto it, but the Americans insisted. And what happened was, is de Gaulle and the Free French were meant to come over as interpreters, and de Gaulle basically got them all to set up civilian governments, and they're the Americans to tell them no. And Eisenhower's like, well, I guess they're the government now.
And the thing is, Franklin Roosevelt actually ordered Eisenhower to disperse them, and Eisenhower said, no, I'm here to fight Germans. I have no interest in wanting to start off an insurgency by the French.
And the key thing here is, right, the Gaulle as a general is slightly overrated. Blitzkrieg wasn't that big an idea. It wasn't that unique an idea. It was quite clear that tanks were infantry, they were cavalry, as the Germans used in 40. But he was a good general, and he'd impressed Eisenhower in the interactions they'd had on the Italian front and in the when fighting for the French colonies. And I think that helped. The fact that he was an impressive figure. I have a story, I won't get into it because we'll be here all day, but we start swapping stories about the goal.
Shall we move on to Le Pen?
Well, no, hang on. Then you have the fact that you actually managed to re-establish French democratic government in 45. I mean, people forget, as much as we bang on about de Gaulle and the Free French, de Gaulle was not sure whether, when he entered France, Paris, he would not be shot by communist snipers, because the communists had been very active in the French resistance. But that guy insisted on marching into Paris, not with a helmet on, with a hat. I mean, the balls on a man are incredible.
Yeah.
So you have that. Now, he quits because of the parliamentarians basically insist on recreating the Third Republic with the Fourth Republic. He goes away. He then defeats, and this one we haven't mentioned, he defeats the ludicrous idea of the European defence community in 1954 by leading a campaign against both concepts in the referendum that would literally have merged France with Western Germany and created some sort of awful blancmange of France and West Germany, and that would have basically led to France being dissolved into Germany in the fullness of time. The European political community, European defence community, was basically full fat European integration all at the same time. You'd have had complete integration of armed forces, complete integration of European political community. It was pretty heady stuff. I mean, even now, I'd say the European Union is probably, what, 40% that way?
Yeah.
It's pretty incredible what they suggested. And then, of course, you have 58, where France was being torn apart by the war in Algeria and by this thing of, it was clear you couldn't keep hold of Algeria, and nor should you. It wasn't part of France, but Algeria wasn't a colony. It had been annexed. It was like Northern Ireland to the British, and nobody in France had a moral authority to withdraw. And what was happening is it was tearing the country apart. Already the communists were the largest party in the country. And the right were becoming radicalised, they were starting to become attracted to the idea of a military coup. And only de Gaulle could have taken over and managed that withdrawal from Algeria. This wrenching blow to French national pride without France having to become a dictatorship. You know, it's a supreme effort of will.
I think the other thing to say about that is, just very quickly, because we're kind of getting off topic, but it was also to do with the fact that only Charles de Gaulle, with his record and his background, could convince the French military to admit it had lost another war, because the senior officers in Algeria were all men of 1940. Were all men of Indochina. They were determined to restore the army's professional pride and reputation for victory in Algeria, and the fact that the Gaulle convinced them to walk away is a supreme act of statesmanship.
I think, like, I know, we get off topic, but this is one of the reasons why there's a special podcast. I think we knew we're not going to talk about France very often, so it's worth talking about it. But the idea of France was usually at fault for losing the Second World War is the biggest load of nonsense you'll find. I mean, the Wehrmacht was probably the greatest army in human history in terms of rapid military victories. I mean, you look at what they did to the Soviet Union at half strength. You've got to remember, at that point, because they knew the alliance of the Soviet Union, France got their full weight of the German army in 1940.
Okay, seriously, we're way off topic. Move on to Le Pen, Will.
Anyway, so Gaulle's great, and he created the second round system to stop extremists winning. But can you talk about Le Pen? Because I just need to plug the battery in. So you talk about Le Pen and what she means to France.
Well, I mean, as you said, this is a family business. Her father, Jean-Marie Le Pen, founded the Front National in the 1960s. It was very much committed to the idea of a Catholic France, a white France, a corporatist France, and the kind of Austrian or Italian fascist sense of business, labour and the government working together in like this tripartite system, which doesn't have much to do with liberal democracy as we'd understand it. There are also, you can't avoid getting back into the Second World War here, because there are also overtones of the Vichy regime involved with it. The thing to say about the Front National is, you were saying earlier, Will, about whether it genuinely had moderated itself or not. It is important to say that that generation that founded the party has largely died out now. Yes. And its preoccupations are very different now than they were in the 1960s.
It's worth saying that we talk about the Algerian War in the 50s, 60s. It's worth remembering that Le Pen got the second round in 2002, but France had had a load of issues in the 90s with Algerian terrorism, partly because France keeps interfering in its former colonies. But, you know, France, the Algerian issue was not an historic issue. Le Pen Senior got to the second round in 2002?
Well, yeah, I mean, France does interfere in its ex-colonies. Algeria, less so than some others. But
you had the attack in the French Paris metro in, what,
95, 96? Looking to the future, how do you think, who's going to be...
One thing on the comparison between her and her father. What's not clear is whether her strategy has worked. Whether we think it's genuine or not, she clearly has tried to detoxify her party's brand. She, on the projections, and before we go, we will double check the latest vote totals, but on the projections, she was on 21%. Now, her father got roughly 19% in 2002 in the first round. But, crucially, two things to say about it. One, there was a breakaway got 18%. 18%, but there was a breakaway National Front candidate. On the second round, he got roughly 22%. So you'd say on that basis, she's not done that well. She's basically just ebbing along with what her dad got, and all this detoxification is for naught. But like Luke says, a lot of that old generation, that explicitly racist generation, has gone away. As the, you know, as immigration takes has its effect, even if that generation was there, its influence is diluted. So you'd actually say just keeping steady suggests she has broadened out to a certain extent. But a key thing for her is, can she do better on the second round? This is where the rubber hits the road. If she can prove she can do a little bit better, she can show that detoxification has worked. Because, as I said, I mean, in 2002, Le Pen basically added no votes. He literally just took the other far-right candidates' votes and them to his total. She needs to get 35-40% to prove that she has made herself welcoming to non-National Front voters.
Yeah, I agree with that. I mean, the one thing to say is all the polls that have put Le Pen and Macron together in a theoretical contest have Macron crushing her by up to 25 points.
Well, I mean, you've already started to see it. With Francis Fillon, the Conservative candidate, has came out and said, with a heavy heart, I back Macron. I do not agree with him, but we are facing a threat to the Republic. Hamon has came out and said, we are facing a threat to the Republic. The one exception is Michelon. Michelon has said he will not back either candidate, that both are not the change France needs. And I don't know what you think, Luke, but part of me thinks if you know the centre's going to unite around Macron, maybe it's worth, for the longer term objective of trying to get the National Front out of some of these northern French heartlands that they have taken off the socialists, that Michelon's neo-communist movement does need to be one step away from Macron, so that he can then win, say, the parliamentary elections or another presidential election or some of the midterm elections and say, I did not back Macron, I did not back the globalists. I am on your side, it's Le Pen who's a fraud.
Risky strategy.
But again, I suppose this question, is it a risky strategy when all the evidence suggests she's going to lose quite clearly?
I see what you mean, but, the potential consequences if you're wrong.
But I mean, but again, like, if every party, if Michelin joins everybody else and Macron fails, what is the alternative?
We'll see.
As we were talking about, every French president fails since Mitterrand, and his success was failing early enough to succeed later. But anyway, let's finish. I'm trying to find the current results, but I can't find them. So let's assume. Hey, let's ask this question. The projection said Macron won. When we saw this podcast, the actual vote said Le Pen was in the lead. We think that will probably be reversed before the night is done, because the urban areas Macron is strong are counting later because their polls close later. But what is the psychological difference of Le Pen winning?
I don't think it's such a big shock that it'll make very much difference, to be honest.
See, I would disagree, because I think we've had the National Front win before. That has happened in our past, in our recent past, in 2002. I think National Front winning is a real coup for Marine Le Pen. And that will help her in her battle against her niece, Marine Le Pen, who is, believe it or not, much more conservative than her aunt. And it will help her solidify her position in the party. But you'll also say something very profound about France. Because if you have Marine Le Pen and, say, Michelon, 1 and 3, it will say, even if Macron wins, he basically wins almost as a, like a coalition of losers figure. And that what France really wants is a big divergence from the status quo, which they won't get. And that is a ticking time bomb, particularly if you get a anti-European Union majority, sorry, anti-Euro majority in Italy. This story, anybody who thinks the Macron presidency is the end of the rise of populism in Europe is sorely mistaken. And on that note, we're going to leave. It's a good job we did not do this as a segment on tomorrow's podcast, because it would have gone forever. But I have been Will Calling. He has been Luke Midup. This has been It Could Be Said, and you have been listening. Speak to you in a while.